Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host our show, Life, Laughter, Happiness. Today, I have my guest today, which is Kate Grabowski, and she's a UFOologist. And, you know, and my co-host is Barbara Moore. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I am here. Hi, Johnny, and hi,
oh, yeah.
I believe it's Katie, not Kate, Katie.
Katie, is it Katie, Katie? It doesn't, which is your preferred.
Most people call me Katie. There's a few that call me Kate, so I'm okay with either or.
Thanks
for having me on.
So pretty. Oh, we are so excited to have you on because you are the real thing. You are a UFOlogist. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's right. Again, some people pronounce it that way, and some people call it ufologist, however you like to say it. But, yeah, I've been at this since 2012 looking for answers for some things I experienced as a young girl. So I really like to get down in there and research and go to archives and give interviews or do interviews and all sorts of things. So I'm excited to share with you guys some of what I've discovered along the way.
Okay. I have heard recently that this topic has been on the news and that there have been sightings from pilots actually doing commercial flights. And then it seems like the news will cover it just a little bit. Are they hiding this from us?
Well, yeah, I think most of us know they've been hiding this for decades and decades, really. It is exciting that, you know, we're starting to see this on the news almost daily. You'll see little hints. There was a lot of buildup for this big report that just came out last month. And, you know, of the 144 cases that they looked at, they could only explain one of them away. And they're saying that our Navy ships and our military bases are being visited almost, you know, almost daily, quite often. So I think slowly they're releasing these videos and they're making it easier for pilots and personnel to come forward with these sightings. In fact, they have a new protocol for them to report it. So, you know, slowly I think they've just cracked the door open is what's happening. I think go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say something about that is like, for example, what I've heard is that the people that are seeing this can't identify what it is. But see, here's the thing. It's one thing if it was another country, but we've got the best military and scientists in the world. And it just seems kind of strange that you know, a ship could go past us and we not be able to identify it. You see what I'm talking about, Barbara and Katie?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I hope that the United States is, you know, technologically more advanced than some of our allies, but I know it's a big question mark, and that's why they want to investigate these further. And what's more are the footage that they have of these tic-tac-type craft that they see that basically stop on a dime and then go hover right above our oceans and then go under the water and then shoot out. So we don't have anything like that. I don't think any other countries, as far as we know, has the capabilities of doing that. So, you know, I think the exciting thing to me in that report is they're wanting to put the resources and funding into really investigating what these things are.
And also, do you work with any members of the government to find out answers?
I don't personally know. I'm just kind of out there doing my own thing, and it's kind of interesting, you know, being an investigator for MUFON. There was actually just J.J. Abrams did a series called UFO, and the third episode was kind of about the government infiltrating MUFON. And, you know, I don't know if per se they've done that. I know Bob Bigelow and that was working with MUFON years ago. But, you know, people have come out and asked me personally, you know, if I'm kind of out there being told what to say or disinformation, or, and that's never, ever been the case. You know, I've just been investigating this ranch that I grew up on as a child, and nobody's ever come to me from the government that I'm aware of anyway, and, you know, has tried to steer a narrative or anything like that. So.
Okay. And what is MUFON? You're the director for MUFON in Colorado, correct?
Yeah, MUFON is, yes, I am. MUFON is the Mutual UFO Network. And we basically, they like to say we kind of took over in 1969 when Project Blue Book closed. So, you know, MUFON's been around since 1969, and it's worldwide. We're in several different countries. And if somebody sees something they really can't explain, they'll fill out a report online, and it'll go to the state where they have the sighting, and then an investigator will contact you and will help you to determine what it is you saw. You know, my numbers are about 80% of the time I can figure out what it is, and we call those IFOs, or identified flying objects, you know, whether they're lens flares or birds in the sky or, you know, the planet Venus. I hate to say it, but we do get some of those. It's interesting. We have over the Bronco games, football games, we have sky jumpers that come on and they have flames on the bottom of their feet, and they look really unusual when you're filming them from a distance, and we'll get those, you know, people will think those are UFOs. So, you know, we go through our due diligence to try and find out what it is you saw. And like I said, a lot of the times we can, with quite certainty, say what you saw, but it does leave the unknowns. There are those ones that we can't figure out, and those are what keep us going and keep us digging.
Wow, this is so interesting. Well, can we start at the beginning and talk about what you saw on your ranch as a child?
Sure, yeah. Are you guys familiar with the infamous Skinwalker Ranch in Utah?
No.
Are you, Johnny?
No, I'm not.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, there's a ranch. There's actually a History Channel show, Hunt for the Skinwalker, on now. That's all about the Skinwalker Ranch. But from 1975 to 1978, I was 9 to 12 years old. And back during those years, there were hundreds of cattle mutilation, and not only cattle, but horse and sheep, a lot of craft. Yeah, a lot of craft flying on and off the property. Strange helicopter sightings and helicopters menacing people, and strange bird marks on the ground where, you know, there would be snow all around the outside of the circle. Inside this circle was 35 feet in diameter. It was dry and nothing grew. Sasquatch creatures, disembodied voices, paranormal activity, you name it, it happened out on this property. And both my sister and I and several other witnesses, including the town sheriff and other families, had a lot of activity out there at the time. And we were warned and threatened not to talk about it. And I never really knew it was ever reported or ever investigated until 2013, when I bought a book called Hunt for the Skinwalker, which is about that Skinwalker Ranch in Utah. And in that book, it's written by George Knapp and Colm Kellyer, PhD. There's a chapter called Other Hotspots, and they talk about the Colorado Ranch in there. And that was the first time I had learned that that ranch was ever investigated. And in that book, they mentioned that Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who is a psychologist out of Laramie, Wyoming, and has worked just dozens and dozens and dozens of experiencers from around the world and contactees. He was out there on the ranch and investigated it along with Peter Van Arsdale, PhD, and John Durr, PhD. So I quickly got a hold of Dr. Leo Sprinkle and drove to Laramie and went to the archives and pulled all the original documents from the ranch. And I have just been learning about it and getting newspaper articles and interviewing people now for 10 years. What's really fascinating, though, is what I've uncovered is that there was definitely a military connection to that property. NORAD was very aware of what was happening out there. They were out there investigating. There were two interceptors that crashed out there, and in the report I got, it says they were in pursuit of a UFO, so I just FOIA'd the crash report from those two A-70s that crashed out there at the time, and it's just one thing after another, so it's pretty compelling that the government and the military, you know, they were out there investigating things, and I do believe there might even be a MK-Ultra connection to it as well.
Well, why do you think that the government is hiding this from us? Do they think that we cannot handle the truth or handle their findings?
I think it's a combination of reasons. I think that, you know, back in the late 60s and early 70s, there were a lot of unacknowledged black access like projects, just like MK Ultra and mind control and, you know, chemicals they were testing. And I do believe some of the cattle mutilations were them testing our water and our land, and who knows what they were doing out there. I'm not really the cattle mutilation expert. I know Chuck Sikowski and Christopher O'Brien really know a lot more about cattle mutilations than I do, but I think now at this, you know, all these years later, because up to some really nefarious things, and maybe they worry about, or, you know, people find out they've been lying to the people for all these decades. You know, I mean, we already don't trust them as it is, but if all came out, then, you know, that would be a really huge problem. I think the theory of us not being able to handle that, I think, you know, the last 5 years or so has shown, I don't think there's going to be mass hysteria in the streets. I mean, like you said, they're talking about this on the news some, and everybody just, you know, seems to go about their daily business. I mean, there hasn't been any hysteria, you know?
Yes. Yes. So can we know more? I know that you have a website, Katie Grabowski or Grabowski. Grabowski. Okay.
Yeah.
Go to your website and we can find more information regarding all of this and where to follow you, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And yep, there's links to the book and there's information, you know, on appearances where I'll be and information about MUFON and yeah.
Wow.
So,
you stay
but,
really busy.
Yeah.
So this
yeah,
gives you
really
enough
busy lately,
to work
especially
on.
With the news.
Yes.
What's that?
You've got a lot to look at. So what are some of the things that have come across your desk where you can say, wow, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, but what has made you say, wow, that's unbelievable?
Right. I did start out as kind of a skeptic, and I would ebb and flow back and forth, like, oh, I don't know. You know, I definitely believe there's out there in the universe. Whether it's visiting our planet is another question. It took me years to kind of come to a realization that, yeah, the body of evidence and the amount of witnesses and the commonalities between people is just too overwhelming to say that they haven't been visiting us. And what's really fascinating, just last month I did a conference in Laughlin, Nevada, and we had people from what they like to call places that have a lot of different types of activity, like cattle mutilations, craft, and paranormal activity, and military connections. They call them places of high strangeness. So we had people from the Skinwalker Ranch and Blind Frog Ranch, and there's also a place down south called the Meadows Project. And we were all there presenting about our high strangeness ranches and properties, and it was fascinating to note that a lot of this activity is still happening to this day, and so many of these high strangeness places. There's also one in Pennsylvania, and there's another one in Missouri called Barley Woods. So we have all these locations, Pennsylvania, Missouri, down south, in Utah, and Colorado, that have very similar type activity, including these really strange, mysterious boxes that seem to disappear. And I know that sounds just nuts, but I witnessed it myself. And
well, I have a question. You had said that you had been threatened about exposing this.
Yeah, back in the late 70s, the family and I were threatened not to talk to anybody about this. Even the sheriff, all his photos were confiscated, and he was told to not report on any of these mutilations anymore. It was all over the news. Linda Moulton Howe actually got her start out here in Colorado at the time, both in the San Luis Valley and Elbert County, with all these mutilations happening. But they were told explicitly by NORAD and the Air Force to not talk about this anymore, to say it was just all cattle kill or wildlife kill. So, we were warned not to talk about it, and we didn't for years and years. It wasn't until 2013 it was even reported at all. So it's been a quite fascinating journey to get the one of the notes that we have here was from Camp Carson, and NORAD basically says, I can read it to you guys, it says, the Bill Wall, the undersheriff, wants to talk to someone. He has seen ships going into the ground, boxes and mutilations being done. Nobody will talk. He doesn't want investigation or publicity. No stigma. The credentials are an important factor. NORAD colonel to said bluntly to forget about it and to shut up. Air Force has directive to handle the UFOs and the Bigfoot. So they were even aware of the Sasquatch creatures out there at the time.
Reason I know about those.
Yeah.
Those were seen where I'm from in Seattle. Those are scary.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that they had a connection with the UFOs.
Some people believe they do, and some people believe they don't. There's a really good book by Stan Gordon that actually connects a lot of these Sasquatch beings to UFOs. I think that it's been my personal experience that these particular beings that were seen out there on the ranch property at the time were directly connected to the craft that were seen out there, but I don't think that's always the case. It just happens to be the case in this instance. So that's a whole other interesting topic, and it really goes into, you know, whether these are interdimensional beings or, you know, what doorways these ships are flying in and out of. Some people believe there's like portals on these high strangeness ranches. And it's interesting. I did some, investigating on all these different properties around the country, and you can go to the geological map of the United States for high magnetized areas. So where the land is highly magnetically charged, so it's like as high as it can get, it's the lightest shade of pink, and all of these areas that have these high strangeness activity on them are all very highly magnetic areas. And I found that was really interesting. So I don't know if that actually opens up some sort of portal or doorway. I know on Skinwalker Ranch, there was a few people, investigators out there, and they had military-grade vision goggles on, and they actually saw like a portal or a doorway open and this being crawl out of it and run off. And the people that were just looking with the regular eyes could see this thing open up. So I thought that was interesting.
I don't know if there's an interdimensional.
Yeah.
It probably is in these high strangeness areas, which I've never even heard of that term used before. But I'm sure you have interviewed people who say that they were abducted and put back. Can you tell us some of their stories?
We at MUFON, we have what we call the experience or research team, and a lot of those abduction cases go to our ERT team. And Kathleen Martin, who is the niece of Betty and Barney Hill, runs that group. But it's fascinating to talk with these folks, because what I always like to look for are commonalities between people who have had these experiences, and it's a real clear pattern seems to emerge. One thing I notice is, for whatever reason, a lot of these folks have these a lot of like extra sensory abilities. They tend to be very intuitive. Psychic abilities will open up for them. It's interesting to me, the vast majority of them tend to think, tend to say it's a positive experience in their lives. It may not start out that way, but ultimately they come to feel that it's a positive experience. Now, there are those exceptions that feel like it's been a bad experience. So, yeah, it's very interesting to talk to these people and take their accounts.
You know, it's funny, you say that some of the experiences have been positive when they meet the aliens. And, you know, what's interesting is why hide that? I mean, why, threaten people from having that be exposed? I mean, that's what I can't figure out. I mean, if it's something that's going to, make you feel good and make you enlightened into the ways of the universe, why would you be threatened for revealing that if you could ask that, if answer that?
Right. And I think that the threatening that we got didn't come from ET or anybody else. That came from the military. I think the military was out there on the ranch. And my big question was, were they out there investigating the high strangeness activity that was going on, or were they out there creating it? And I think it's a combination of both. But I think the vast majority of contactees or ET experiencers, they go through a gamut of emotions where it may start out as a very scary event for them, especially if they're being taken when they're young. And as they grow and the enlightenment kind of opens up in them, they kind of come around to a more positive experience. Just like with Travis Walton, who had his abduction experience out in Snowflake, Arizona back in, I think it was 1976. It wasn't till decades later that he realized that they probably took him on board, because when they hit him with that blue beam that knocked him out, that for him, it was a terrifying experience at first, but he later realized that he probably took him aboard to help heal him and put him back, So it's interesting how the feelings around your experience can change. But we do have both. We do have some that are very traumatized by it and feel very isolated. So it's important when you work with experiencers that they get the help they need around that. And it's always helpful to have other people they can talk to safely about it. So, like Dr. Leo Sprinkle, he was really, really good. He would put people under hypnosis, and he was a really good sounding board for these folks to have someplace safe to report their experiences to. And he did a lot of psychological testing around these in comparison, and he has found that the majority of experiencers, tested normal on their, psychologically their sound. So,
yes. Well, are you ever afraid that you will be kidnapped when you're really close to these, or you're on these high strangeness areas? Do you worry about it at all?
No, I really don't. For me, the Elbert County Ranch, the height of it was so many decades ago, and people will ask, why are you still researching this, 40 years later? And the answer is, A, because it's personal and it hasn't been solved. And like I said, by talking to other people, I'm learning so much about these other places, like in Missouri and in the South and still at Skinwalker, that these things are still occurring. So I think by looking at all these different locations, and if we can find the commonality between what links all these places together that's causing this, we'll maybe start to have answers to some of these questions. It's interesting. There's a lot of Native American connections to these. And so, I don't know how sacred ground plays a role in any of this. Like in the Colorado Ranch, we had the Cheyenne and Arapaho. Skinwalker was Ute and Navajo. So that's kind of another interesting piece. about it. Another fascinating piece about these is there's these humming sounds and these noises that come from underground. So people are looking at caves under the ground or tunnels, or perhaps, you know, they were digging under there, because on the ranch we would hear what it sounded like banging and like drilling under the ground, under the ranch house.
I have a question. Wow. Now, you've also studied Bigfoot. I mean, is Bigfoot related to UFOs, in your opinion?
That's what she was talking about. What's the other word? Sasquatch?
Sasquatch.
That's a Bigfoot.
Sasquatch, yeah.
Yeah.
I think some of them might be. I mean, some of them might be. There have certainly, I mean, there was the account in Ohio, Pennsylvania, that they had a Sasquatch-type creature. They actually shot at this being, and it just vanished in a flash of light. Police were called in. It was several witnesses, and there was a crash scene at the same time. So it appears that some of them might be, you know, and whether that's an interdimensional type of being or creature, I don't know. And I know to some of your listeners, it sounds way out there, and it did to me as well. But the more you interview people and the more articles I've accumulated through the years, and I mean, I've talked to very, very credible people, including the undersheriff of the town, you know, so it's fascinating as you collect these accounts, you know.
Yes, and you say there's a show on right now on the History Channel that we can tune into. What is that? Again?
There's two, actually. There's Hunt for the Skinwalker, and there's also the Blind Frog Ranch, which is quite interesting, too.
Okay. I'm going to look at that. I do believe it. Another reason why I think it's happening is because, remember when they used to go down on fields, farm areas, and make these huge kind of like artwork, round shapes into the wheat or whatever was growing, and they would make these marks on the land. And they mm-hmm. could not explain that. Nobody with a tractor was doing it. So how do you explain it? That makes me feel like this is true.
Again,
really,
you're talking about the crop circles,
yes.
And a whole other phenomenon. Again, just like everything in this field, and this is what makes our field so frustrating and difficult sometimes to research. A lot of those have been man-made, but there are those handfuls that they can't explain. So even there was a famous footage of a crop circle, and that was proven to be a fake, and it muddies the water, and it makes our job so much more difficult, because you have people that intentionally hoax and intentionally send false photographs, and that's so much easier to do in this day and age with our cell phones and all our Photoshop programs and everything else. So it, you know, it muddies the waters for us as investigators, but if we do our due diligence and get out there and really vet our witnesses and make sure you are getting reports from highly credible people, and that helps that. But yeah, there were no crop circles out there at the time, but just those large burn marks on the ground, which were also reported out at Skinwalker Ranch as well. And then the paranormal activity is really fascinating too, because it seems like anytime you're out there trying to investigate, it almost seems like whatever is connected to these ranches or the land out there, it's almost like they stay like a step ahead of you. Like they know what's coming. So it's, they're almost like tricksters in a way. And that can be quite frightening.
Oh, yes. Oh, I would think it would be really frightening to go back out there as a farmer and work on that land that has been burned or marked in some kind of way. That would be a little creepy. And do you know what these aliens look like? Do they look like the picture that everybody is always drawing? How do we know? Or is this just something we humans came up with, how we think they look?
Right. Well, you asked me what one of my favorite cases was, and that kind of aha moment for me. And when I went to the archives to pull the files on the Elbert County Ranch, there was a drawing in there, one of the Sasquatch creature and one of an ET that was seen out there on the property. Now, I personally didn't see this being, but two of the other family members did. And they had sketched what it was they saw, and it was something I had never seen before in, like, popular movies or TV or anything. It wasn't your typical little gray classic alien-looking thing. It had smaller eyes, but larger than our eyes, but they were almond. Wrinkles on the forehead, really heavy brow, wrinkles around the mouth like a little old man. But what was really interesting is had these strange-looking tubes coming out from both sides of the head. And so I didn't put it out there anywhere. I just kept it in my back pocket, didn't show it to anybody because I wanted to see if I could find another one that looked similar. And like 2 years later, we had a guest speaker for our Colorado MUFON chapter, and there was a gentleman named Sean Bartok that had written a book called Flashbacks. And I was sitting in the third row watching his presentation, and he actually had property only 14 miles away from where the Elbert County Ranch was, and he showed these two drawings of these beings that were seen out at his property, and they you couldn't be any closer of a match. Same identical face shape, same wrinkles, same tube, same everything. And I was floored. I'm like, what are the chances of that?
My question is, why? What is this business with livestock? Why are they so interested in livestock?
That's a really good question, and it's so difficult when you get into the whys. Like I said, I believe a lot of the livestock mutilations probably was our military testing cattle's organs and things for maybe chemicals that they were testing in our land and our water, perhaps. The aliens, if ET's doing any of that. One compelling interview I did was from a woman who her family were longtime ranchers out there in Elbert County at the time. And she had just purchased property, her and her husband. This was in 1958 in Rama, Colorado, which is right there, right next borders to Elbert County. So they had, I think she said 160 acres, and her husband was out checking the cattle for calves, and he came across where the calves was dead on the ground, and it had a square cut, 4 incisions, and the calf was dead, but the top of the fur was removed, and so he went back to get his wife, and they went back in the pickup truck. It took them 20 minutes to get back, and by the time they got back, the calf had been completely mutilated. All organs removed, blood drained, laser incision. There were no track marks, no helicopters, no sounds, and she said they felt like they were being watched, and it was very eerie. So that was a very interesting case because it's like he almost interrupted an abduction happening or a mutilation happening as it was occurring. Yeah, so I thought that was a fascinating interview. And she felt very evil. And out there on the ranch property, I mean, everybody had loaded shotguns by their door. There were a $10,000 reward to catch these mutilators at the time. They thought one theory back in the day was that they were being conducted by cult activity, you know. But the thing with that is there were so many happening, not only in Colorado, but in Montana, in Wyoming, in New Mexico, Kansas, and Nebraska. So these weren't just happening in Colorado at the time. And you would think if it was only the military doing that, why wouldn't they just conduct their own experiments on their own cattle or go up to the ranchers and purchase a cattle. You know, I don't know. The whole phenomenon's really, really interesting. And I know there's been, like I said, like Christopher O'Brien, who spent a lifetime trying to figure out these strange mutilations. And, you know, it's just one piece of the high strangeness puzzle. That's just one piece of it. But, you know, there's still not a lot of good answers onto why ET or anybody else would be doing this, not just to cattle, but to horse and to sheep as well.
Yes. Well, at least they know, these aliens know, to not do it to human beings.
Well, I hope not. I know that was a fear of the time when I did some interviews, that people were afraid that would start happening. So there was a lot of fear going on at the time.
Yes. And people who have been abducted, who are missing, you never really know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they are up there with these aliens. I hope not.
I hope not either. I know.
These years that you know so many people who have their lifetime studying this and never really reaching clear answers. I know this must be frustrating to you, but it doesn't seem to stop you.
Yeah. No, I think what happens is the more answers you get, the more questions you have. And it's sort of like this rabbit hole you never get out of. And, you know, I'm finding that where we would really like to have simple answers, I think the true answers are not that simple. I think the answer is very complex, and I think it's multi-layered, and that's what really keeps me digging and going, you know?
I think
it could be from any planet. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
John, they could be from any universe. There's so many out there. They might not even be from a planet. Maybe they don't have their own planet. And there might be many of them. There might be many different tribes, groups, nations of extraterrestrials, correct?
That's true. And I've heard every number you can think of thrown out there, you know.
Really?
You know. Oh, yeah, 7 to 100. So, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, sorry. About the theory about it being complicated. You know, I thought about this myself. I tried to create a scenario where an alien could visit us and not violate any laws of physics or anything like that. And one of the thoughts I thought about is that Barbara brought it up. Why does it have to be in a planet? I mean, maybe they've created their own colony and they're, you know, that would explain, like, them being from such a far planet, they were just in a colony, you know, and they figured out how to live in that colony. That actually would explain, you know, well, why does it have to be from some planet? I mean, we've been trying to do that for years, so that seems like that would be, you see what I'm saying? Does that make sense, Kate and Barbara?
That they may not be from a planet. There, she said 7 to 100 different groups,
right,
tribes, nations, whatever they call it, they're out there, and they have probably a lot of information on why they think this. So, again, I think everybody needs to go to your website and find out more through there, katiegribowski.com, G-R-I-B-O-S-K-I. And then that'll lead everybody to different places, like how to get your book. Is your book called Letters of Love and Light?
Yes, Letters of Love and Light. It's 4 decades of UFO encounters, experiences, and sightings shared with ufologist R. Leo Sprinkle, PhD. And when I went down there to get the files from the ranch, I ended up getting lost in 84 boxes of handwritten letters people had written to Dr. Sprinkle from all around the world of their own personal experiences, encounters, through a lot of decades, to the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. So I organized them. It took me 3 years to put the book together, but I have a chapter called Motives, like, you know, why, and we are just kind of touching about that right now, you know, other dimensions, channeling ETs, abductions. A lot of people wrote in about dreams or memories, because a lot of people, you know, they said, man, this is the most vivid dream I had. Didn't really seem like a dream. So I include letters about that, letters from children. So these were all people that wrote into Dr. Sprinkle. And it still honors his life's work of working with contactees and experiencers for over 40 years. And I just thought, well, if I'm getting lost in these letters and I find them interesting, I thought other people might find them interesting as well. So I pulled out all the juicy parts of the letters, you know.
Well, yes, that's what put them in that book. Read. That's what, mm-hmm. you know, human nature, we want to know the details. So I'm so glad that you did this book. And I find it to be very interesting. I want to read people's stories, don't you, Johnny?
Yes.
Yeah, and the more you read, yeah, the you know, after reading hundreds and hundreds of letters, you kind of get a good sense after, like, the first paragraph, you know, whether this is a genuine experiencer or somebody just trying to pull your leg. And there were really good letters, too, from people that are really high up in their fields. We're talking, you know, PhDs that were really scientifically looking at this phenomenon very seriously, and those are fascinating to read as well. And of course, there are the letters from the skeptics and the naysayers as well. So it just ran the gamut of everything. But Dr. Leo Sprinkle, he just had his 90th birthday, and what a treasure he is. Yeah, he is just a fabulous man, and is just one of those people that was just so gracious with his time. And you know, you know, he would sit and talk to you for an hour, and just, you know, and those are hard to find nowadays, you know. So just a fabulous person. Yeah, so I was happy to do
Facebook.
That book for him.
Yes, and so, wow, he has studied this so much, and you are connected with him really well. So I'm so glad that you're carrying on the information that he has found.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that was my thought. I thought, well, you know, these letters shouldn't be hid away in dark boxes of archives that really very few people will ever see again. So, I mean, they need to be shared. And it's my opinion that's the only way this phenomenon will ever see the light of day is to be shared and to collaborate with one another. You know, and I really think that's the reason why the government and why you're seeing this on the news is, I believe, since we have, you know, Zoom meetings and the internet, and they know that they can't keep this stuff a secret for much longer. They know something's coming down the pipe, so they better start talking about it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because the truth is coming out.
People.
The truth is coming out, whether they like it or not. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And when you were reading through all of these letters, I bet you would be able to put a couple together, like, oh, this person in this state, their experience was just like these people that they didn't even know. Did you put a lot of those together?
Yeah, I did. But what's fascinating is, a couple months after I had the book come out, I actually had somebody contact me via my website there, and they're like, hey, Katie, I'm sure you've already noticed this, but you know the drawing on page, whatever page it was on, and the drawing on the other page, you know, if you turn it upside down, those two symbols match. And I didn't even notice that. And I was like, no, I didn't even notice. And sure enough, they're correct. And that's why, again, it's important to share this information, because I might not put something together, but somebody else might, you know. So I thought that was really cool. Yeah.
It is?
Yeah, that's true.
Wow. I didn't even know a book of everybody's stories existed. So this is awesome. I know the pictures are probably really interesting, but is this on Audible as well?
It is, yes. You can download it on Audible and several other platforms as well. And that link is also on my website there.
Okay, I'm doing it right now because I have a free Audible. It says I can get it for free.
Okay.
I like it because then you can just have it playing and you don't have to spend time to just sit with the book, and you can get other things done while you hear the stories. So
right.
But some people want it.
Yeah.
Want to hold it in their hands. So you have both. So that's good. Right on Amazon.
Yeah. Something I'd like to say about those strange looking creatures or ET beings that were seen out at the property. I was at the grocery store one day and standing in line looking at the magazines, and there was a issue of Popular Science, and it was all about the new artificial intelligence. And there was a photograph on the cover of an AI being with like a human type face and these tubes in its neck. And it was almost identical to these drawings. And it kind of clicked in my mind at that point. Like, it makes sense in my mind that if you're going to be traveling from another planet to Earth, you would want some sort of AI being. So I just thought that was kind of fascinating.
Wait,
and it's,
what is an AI?
AI, artificial intelligence.
Okay.
A very robotic, yep. And the disembodied voice be heard on the property was very robotic sounding. So
interesting.
It just makes sense to me that some of these ET beings that are visiting us might not be, you know, they might be artificial intelligence or robotic type beings.
I have been watching, hold on, please, a missing persons show, and this girl who was 16 or a teenager, she was really interested in this kind of thing, and she got really, really into it, and all of a sudden, she disappeared, and they never found her. So there be some people who they abduct, and they may not be giving them back.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I'm afraid of the most. I mean, have you heard of David Pilates in the Missing 411? He talks about the number of people who go missing, and so many that go missing in our national parks. And, you know, he doesn't really come right out and say that it's ET related, but it certainly leaves you scratching your head. It makes you wonder, and I hope that's not the case.
I know, me too. And then there was another little boy who was just just disappeared from the campground, and they just don't know. I mean, you would have been able to find the body. They found his clothes, and the clothes were all completely in good order. Just nothing was dirty, but they found them all the way on the top of the mountain. And if an animal would have drag those, it would have showed scuff marks and things like that. That's a whole nother case right there. I think it may be happening.
Right. Unfortunately, that might be the case, which then just leads you to the question. I mean, I think he goes into actually saying a lot of these missing folks have very similar backgrounds and are highly educated people, PhDs and doctors and things. So what the heck is happening there? Are they, you know, taking some of our best and who, you know what I mean? So that's a whole other area.
Young people who are interested.
If any of your listeners out there are interested in becoming an investigator or a researcher in any of these topics, it's really important to kind of stay grounded and kind of pick an area of main interest, because there's so many different avenues and venues to go down in so many specialties. You know, there's people that really are fascinated by the orb phenomenon or these orange lights that are often seen in the forest. Like I said, there's the mutilations, the crop circles, the abductions of the contactees, there's so many different sides that you can investigate. It's important to kind of stay focused on one. Otherwise, you just get so lost and scattered in all of it.
So you need more people to help.
Okay.
What's that?
You need more people to help.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
I was curious about something. You know, one of my mom's favorite movies is Close Encounters of the Third Kind. How much is the stuff that we see in movies is based on real life? I remember they actually asked Steven Spielberg his opinion on aliens, and he said he thought that they were real. I'm curious, like, is the stuff that we see in the movies the way it is, or do you think that it's just not like the movies at all?
No, absolutely. I think they definitely use movies. Matter of fact, so Close Encounters came out in 1977, and Steven Spielberg worked directly with J. Allen Hynek. As a matter of fact, he makes a cameo in that movie. And what's funny about that, I was just telling folks in Las Vegas when I was there for the symposium that as a kid, I remember going to watch this, and to me it seemed like, oh, this is a documentary, because I was sort of living that movie. It didn't occur to me that most people didn't see it as a documentary, but actually a sci-fi movie. But, you know, the movie Contact, for example, with Jodie Foster is another good example, and several, The Abyss. I think they're kind of giving us through films and popular media, you know, tidbits of reality and truth in those films, for sure. We've been drip-fed this for decades now.
Yes. Wow, it all is very, very interesting. So now I have purchased the Audible, and I'm going to read through all those stories, and I just want to say thank you so much for your work with this, because it's not easy. There's a lot of frustrations, and I don't like it how people do the fake, making it harder for you to prove the real. That is so wrong. And I just find it to be a little spooky, but then again, I'm curious. So is there any places in California, this is where I live, that are high strangeness areas that I could go check out?
I don't know about the high strangeness in California, but I do want to say that there's the military sightings are very high there in California. Mm-hmm. I believe, is it off the San Diego coast? So I know that
yes.
You have your yeah. I know you have the craft buzzing around the naval ships up there in California. You know, California for MUFON is divided into three different chapters, and I know they stay very, very busy out there. But I'm not particularly aware of like a high strangeness ranch per se, but I do know that you do get a lot of reports out of California. So your state does stay very, very busy. And another something I'd like to say too is it's kind of a misconception that a lot of the UFO cases you just see at night, some of my best unknown UFO cases are actually daytime sighting cases, and close encounter daytime sighting cases. So, yeah, that's kind of a misconception out there that if you're going to see something, you'll just see lights in the sky at night, and that's not always the case. So keep your eyes to the sky, you know, both day and night for sure. You'll never know. You never know when something unusual might there was an interesting case here in Colorado. A lady was just going to work just like any other day and sees something, and she was like shape-shifting, and she thought maybe it was a bird or something. She pulls the car over, and this thing is just hovering there, changing shape. She couldn't really make out what it was, and right then two F-14 jets come at this thing. And as they're flying towards this object, she said it was like a movie or a special effects where it just disappeared, and one of the jets flew to the east, one flew to the west, and she's like she'd never seen jets fly that low before, but they were definitely going right at this thing, which again makes you wonder how much our military, they are aware of these things, and they do spot them on radar. They do see these things on radar in multiple other sensors. That's something that the report that just came out said, that a lot of these cases were picked up on multiple radar sensors. So that's really fascinating that they're able to see these things.
But then they just disappear.
Yep. Just boom, they're gone. Again, is that an interdimensional kind of thing? Are they going in and out of doorways, out of, you know, portals? I don't know. But, you know, just in the last couple of years, people don't look at me quite as funny as they used to when they knew what I did for a living. I quit my full-time job and decided to research these things full-time. So I'm happy the narrative's changing a little bit, and people are becoming more interested in what I do instead of, you know, going, really? You
know? Thinking it's weird. Right. Well, I do not think it's weird, and I'm glad that somebody is dedicating their life to it, like you, because I want answers. I really do. If
I
we could find them, keep going.
Right. I think it's one of the most important questions we can ask, you know, is A, is there life out there? And then B, if there is, which I think there is, has it been interfering with us or interacting with us in ways? And if so, why? What are they doing? What's the agenda?
They want to test things because if they're hanging around the military mostly, although maybe the military areas are just seeing them more because of their advanced technology. So I'm wondering if you've ever spoken to a time traveler, you know, self-proclaimed time travelers. We've had those on the show a lot. If they've seen anything in regards to
this. I haven't talked to anybody though that is a time traveler, but I know that that is a theory that possibly ET or us from the future coming back and trying to manipulate or steer a certain outcome for, you know, humanity. I mean, I know that's a theory that's out there.
Because these time travelers have a portal and they can tell you where they enter. They know exactly where it is, right, Johnny? All of them.
Something like that, yes.
A portal. And maybe they use the same portal. It's worth checking out to see if the portals that you have found might be the same as the time travelers' portals.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, absolutely. That would be fascinating to go and do some testing out there for sure.
That's another thing to put on your plate, Katie.
Yeah. No, I like that.
Awesome. Wow. Well, Johnny, what do you think about all of this? I'm a believer. Are you?
I mean, it is. What I was telling you before the show is that the actions of the people who the scientists who say we don't think there's anything there is not consistent with that, what they say. I mean, you know, like, for example, I can't figure out why we're going to Mars. That doesn't make any sense that we could ever live there. So why are we going there? Why are we, you know, sending record players into space, you know, of children saying welcome to Earth if we don't think there's anything there?
Uh-huh.
Right. I think they want to terraform Mars, and I think it's the goal to, at least Elon Musk, we want to populate Mars. So I think we should take care of our planet first before we go destroy another one. But to be a multi-planet species would be a goal, I guess. So if an asteroid ever hit our planet, we'd have somewhere to continue life. And the record player that they sent out there, I believe that they wouldn't have sent it if they didn't think somebody out there would eventually intercept it.
Exactly.
So
that's
they
right.
They must know something we don't. They know something we don't. I think that's a given. Yeah, it's time for them to come forward,
like
though.
It.
And
if they could start working with you, wouldn't that be helpful?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah. So have you tried much to contact them to try to work together?
The government and the military?
Yes.
Well, I FOIA for information, and I actually had the head of the Space Force FOIA talk to me for an hour and, was interested in what documents I wanted. And again, I think they're interested because they want to know exactly what I'm up to and why I want the information. So I think their objective is to keep more secrets, not to release the truth.
Because they think we are going to be afraid, scared. It's probably boiling down to money. Oh, well, if people find that out, they won't want to live there and house prices will go down. It's always about money, or they just think we can't handle it for some reason.
Yeah.
But the American people, we deserve to know what they know.
Yeah,
don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's always money and power, but I also think it's, I think they want to keep us unaware of the potential of our own power that we have as individuals and the nature of what true reality is. I think that's another reason to hide it. So,
well, just like
keep us dependent, to keep us stupid. Yeah.
Yes. How people would look at you like, oh, that's odd what you do. And now they're thinking, oh, this is interesting. This is good work.
Right.
Just like it was with the paranormal, with psychics and mediums. Now it's becoming a regular thing. It's not weird anymore for people to use them as counselors. So coming around, like you have noticed, I have noticed this too. Just for it being on the news last month so much, I was shocked that they were actually putting it on the news like that. Because how they've always been very secretive about it, the government. So is there anything you could ask of us, the people? What can we do to help change or help you?
Well, I think the first thing is to take it seriously. And if you see something, I mean, I hate to use this clue, see something, but if you see something you can't understand or explain, report it. And don't feel hesitant to report it. You know, we don't share personal private information. MUFON doesn't. So we keep everybody's names and their contact information completely anonymous. But the more data that we can collect, it helps us to find answers and commonalities between cases and to find these hotspots, you know, not only in the United States, but around the world. And hopefully someday, somewhere, some way, somebody will ask the right question, you know, to get the answers that we're looking for. Yeah.
Oh, I have heard of something recently, which was really strange too, that nobody can figure out what it is. It is government officials and their family members getting affected by brain damage, actually. Something goes into their head. They get very bad headaches. They feel very dizzy. And then they don't know what's come over them. They feel sick. And some have actually gotten brain damage from it. And the government cannot explain it at all.
Oh, that's terrifying and scary. And that brings me back to, you know, you wonder these MK Ultra mind control kind of things where, I mean, that does affect people's brain. And at the ranch, I uncovered a officer from Camp Carson visited the ranch, and he said something would overtake his mind and caused him to go into the ponderosa pines into the woods behind the ranch house, and then it would release his mind. So it was like some sort of mind control or brain control. So, I mean, that's a possibility, and that's quite frightening if that's the case. I mean, you talk about people, and I always thought it was something kind of silly when I'd hear people talk about a upcoming zombie apocalypse, and I'd just chuckle, and yeah, that's just a movie, but those kind of stories make you wonder.
Yes, they do. There's so many of them out there. And why would we not think that they would exist? Because this universe, it is so vast. Why would we think that only our planet, what goes on here, is what goes on? No, there's a lot we do not know out there. So thank you for all your research and your hard work on this. And I would love to always have you come back if you have new findings you could share, or anything you would like to share with the public. You could do it from Life After Happiness podcast, right, Johnny?
That's right. Actually, maybe we could also do a video thing next time. You know, maybe she can show us some stuff. Just an idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I have so many things to show you and sketches and things like that. I'd be happy to come back as your guest. And I have been working on another very, very important case for a couple of years. And I'm just acquiring documents. And COVID has unfortunately shut down a lot of the archives and things. So it's kind of been on hold. But once I get back on that case, I'd be happy to come back and share with all of you what I've uncovered about that other big case I've been working on. So,
oh, that would be fun. That would be awesome. Okay, one more question before we let you go. With the book, do you have to change people's names in there to keep it private for them, or do you give the real names in the book of the stories?
I redacted their names out, and I have them listed by location and date of the letters, but I keep their personal information out. But I would like to say that I did make a very strong effort to contact all the people that wrote the letters. Some of them, unfortunately, are deceased, but I have met a lot of wonderful people through contacting the letter writers, and everybody was just thrilled to be a part of the book and have their information included in there. So I kind of protect, you know, the witnesses that way, but I do give the file number and the folder number. So if anybody is inclined and they're really compelled to research a particular letter for themselves, they can actually go to the archives in Laramie, Wyoming, and pull the file and folder, and all that information would be there for them.
Oh, that's so good. Because I like the idea of maybe putting stories together that match a little bit so they can collaborate and even figure out more. That is
yeah,
awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm excited to read these stories. So thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys
again,
for having
everybody.
Me on.
Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. Interesting stuff. So everybody, check out Katie's website at katiegrabowski.com, spelled TIEGRIBOSKI, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And from there, you can see how to order her book like I just did. And go to her Facebook and all of her other social media and check it out. So this is sure interesting stuff. Thank you for shedding more light on this wonderful, I mean, this is a great topic. I mean, you can never, ever run out of questions with this, right, Johnny?
That's funny.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you again for your time, and we can't wait to hear about your other endeavor soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me on. Happy Labor Day, everybody.
Yes, happy Labor Day. And also, Katie, you can listen to this show again. And everybody, find it on our Life, Laughter, Happiness YouTube channel. So you can listen
That's
to
right.
it again if you came on late. And then see all of our other shows. And visit us, too. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So everybody, have a great night. And we'll see you Monday. Today is Monday. We will see you when, Johnny? When's our next show? Wednesday.
It'll be Friday. It'll be Friday when we have Dale on. All right?
Okay.
So actually,
We're doing my show, Breaking Away with Barbara, on Wednesday with a guest of mine. And the topic will be narcissists. All right.
Ooh.
Katie.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Great night.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.